Live across this big brown, flat, mysterious, crazy country, Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle with an extra 20% free presents Martin Malloy with Mick Malloy and Tony Martin.
And today we've got the tutus on. Mick's dressed as Zorro, I'm painted blue. It's a special grand final edition of the show with the search for a new Mr. Football and details of the controversial Sydney Swans sex ban. For those who are fed up with footy, we've got a preview of our latest movie, which has got the senses in a spin. The Martin Malloy Animal Hospital is open for business, and Mick's got another revealing consumer watch. We'll play Sticky Beaks, Radio Gladiators, and joining us live today, it's comedian Dave O'Neill. Yes, it's all coming up on the program, which today learnt that three of its jokes have been nominated for World Heritage listing Martin Malloy. That's it. That's the way a woman feels here at Martin Malloy. Tina Arena, good afternoon. Australia, welcome aboard. I think it's our midweek edition.
That'll do.
Oh, we love the midweek edition. And who's in today? It's myself, Tony Martin, and just for a change, this bloke here, Nicholas Eady's new chauffeur, Mick Malloy.
Yes, and he's running me ragged too.
Is he now?
Like a little captain.
Oh, beautiful.
It's a nice touch, isn't it?
Now, let's talk football. Let's get straight into it. What is the big news today that's got everyone talking?
Well, Tony, it is a furor. Listen to this. The Sydney Swans have been banned from sleeping with their wives and girlfriends the night before their grand final clash with North Melbourne at the MCG.
Right.
The ban has been implemented by Swans officials who believe the large contingent of players' partners will be a distraction on the eve of the club's first grand final appearance since 1945.
Gee.
One official claimed the no-sex order was not unusual for clubs competing in interstate finals and said it's the day before the grand final, it's not a party, they're going down there to play football.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's pretty tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
What, not even the rhythm method? They're harder than the Vatican, this lot. I feel sorry for the players not being able to sleep with their wives and girlfriends the night before the game. I mean, that's going to cost them a fortune in prostitutes, isn't it? And who's going to pay for that? They'll be out all night curb crawling. That can't be good on the eve of a big clash.
Can they sleep with other players' wives and girlfriends? Has that been specified? Yeah,
you work it out. It's like in their hotel. It'll be like one of those drawing room farces. Doors opening, pants down.
Yes.
There you go. I don't see what the problem is. They're saying their partners might distract them. Mm. Well, that's okay, isn't it? As long as they don't distract their brains out. I've spoken to a few of the players and quite frankly, they don't mind being on the receiving end of a good hard distraction the night before a big game. How do you think Plugger did his groin in the first place? He was going the distract fest. There's no other way to say it. Okay, so the ban has been implemented.
Yeah.
But how do you enforce it? Make the players wear chastity belts? Where do you get those in this day and age?
Gee.
The closest thing I've seen to a chastity belt is Warwick Kappa's footy shorts. And unless the Swans have got a steaming pile of those lying around the locker room, I'd say they're out of luck.
Yes.
Is this just unique to sportsmen? Or are other people discouraged from being distracted by their partner the night before a big event? Would politicians be ordered from the boudoir the night before an election? Would accountants be told to put it away the night before the start of the new financial year? Would Bondi asked not to be distracted by his cellmate the night before a big appeal. What about porn stars the night before filming? That'd just be rehearsal, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, no rehearsal.
No rehearsal. I mean, just how widespread is this practice, Tone?
Yeah.
Tone?
Yeah.
Tone!
Tone! Oh, sorry, Mick, I was a million miles away.
Yeah. Oh, you disgust me. You know the rules. No sex the night before a show.
Mick, that's never been a rule, I don't think.
No, and it probably wouldn't require a major shift in lifestyle if it was. But anyway, Tane, I can't help thinking the entire thing's been blown out of proportion and the whole issue is just a distraction from the game itself. I can say distraction on the radio, can't I?
I think
good.
You're careful.
Yeah, all right. I'm at the limit. You know what could be very interesting during Saturday's game, Tone?
What's that?
Female streaker. No, we've had a few in previous years, but with a horny Sydney Swans side out in the field, it could prove a little more dangerous than usual. She wouldn't get 30 yards before you'd hear, "Hey, fellas, check it out!"
You too with Mysterious Ways here at Martin Malloy. And Mick, if I could just talk footy for a moment.
Cool, blimey. You go for your life.
Yes,
this shouldn't take long.
No. As you know, with the big grand finals coming up this weekend, the media are really starting to push this whole Sydney versus Melbourne angle.
Are they?
Yeah. I know people in other parts of the country probably couldn't give a flying distraction
as the Swans might say, but it is apparently so serious that in the case of the AFL Grand Final, the Dalai Lama has been called in to try and calm things down. Mm. Did you see his speech last night, Mick? Mm. He got all the world peace stuff out of the way up front, then put his notes down, looked off stage and said, "What's the latest on Plugger's groin?" He's got footy fever.
He has.
He just wishes he had been born Siamese twin so he could barrack for both sides. That's the kind of supporter he is. Victorian Premier Jeff Kennett has been fanning the flames by accusing his northern counterpart Bob Carr, of course, ex of Devo, of jumping on the AFL bandwagon. Kennett said that during the game, Carr would probably be clutching a novel instead of the footy record. Yeah, well, rather that than the copy of Mein Kampf. You'll be beat down in for the full four quarters, Jeff. I love it when politicians have to pretend to be footy fans around grand final time, because very few of them can get away with it. Remember a few years back when Paul Keating suddenly announced he was a Collingwood supporter, then spent an afternoon driving all over the North Shore of Sydney looking for the place? Remember that? John Howard is an equally unconvincing footy supporter, I reckon. God, the Swans. He makes me look like the late Ted Whitten. Ted, of course, was the AFL's Mr. Football, who sadly passed away last year. And I noticed, Mick, no one else has yet dared to claim the Mr. Football crown.
No.
And I think this is mainly because no one else has been able to successfully emulate Teddy's vice-like handshake.
That's the one.
Yeah, did you ever shake Ted Whitten's hand, Mick?
Oh, yeah.
It was an amazing 1-2 manoeuvre. First, he'd reduce your hand to powder. Then he'd suddenly pull down, instantly dislocating your shoulder in the process.
Yep.
It was like arm wrestling Amanda Vanstone for the last dim sim in the Parliament House, Bay Marie. Don't you just know when Ted arrived upstairs, St. Peter would have been there going, "In you come, Mr. Foot." "No, no, your application's been accepted. No need to shake on it. Straight through." Now, I don't know if we'll ever see another Mr. Football. Mm. I myself went through a very ill-advised Paul Keating-style phase where I decided to become a fan of New Zealand football.
Did you?
Do you remember that, Mickey? It was a complete affectation. Lived there for 21 years, never once went to a game, moved to Australia. Yeah, I'm a big All Black fan. Khan the Silver Fern. It lasted for about a week. I'd show up at my local pub in the full uniform going, "Hey, everyone, who wants to take part in a quick scrum? Let's have a penalty shootout and score some tries. Yeah, who's on for a quick harker?" And everyone would just humour me. They'd be going, "Oh, look, it's one of the All Blacks." Then you'd hear Pauline Hanson's voice, "All Blacks, we don't want their sort here." Girl, that's Maxi Priest, assisted by Shaggy. Or as I call him, Mr. Bombastic.
There he is.
That's what he calls himself.
Mr. Bombastic.
And that's what I'm calling him now. I hope I wasn't irritating people in cars with a bit of the old...
bit of pee action.
Pee action in the last segment. Here's what happened about an hour ago. I've said to our producer, Gracie, "I'm going to need a whistle for the segment. Go out and see if you can find us a whistle." I don't even know if they make whistles anymore. I think it's something from our parents' generation.
He's out carving one.
He's come back with one of these. It's one of these party whistle things like this.
That's the one.
And I'm going, I don't think they use them at the footy. I mean, I'm not even sure if they still use these ones, do they?
That'd be a good look, though.
A ref running around. You're next. You're finished in this game. Up before the tribunal. Oh, I think does that have to go back to somebody? That has to go back to a cop out front of the station directing traffic. Sorry about that. All right, well, enough footy talk for one program, I reckon. Let's have ourselves some suspense.
Next on Martin Malloy PayTV, Stephen King unleashes his most terrifying creation yet.
Hey, did we get any mail today?
Yeah, I think so. There's a couple of things here.
Where'd you put them?
I think they're over there on the stand.
The Stand. A new level of terror from the master of suspense.
Does anyone see my runners?
Yeah, there they are. Just over there, under the stand.
Stephen King's The Stand. Who knows when or where it will strike.
Hello? Anyone home?
Yeah, in here, mate.
Oh, all right, g'day, mate.
Jeez, who left that stand there?
The Stand. It looks harmless enough, but when you least expect it...
I'll get it.
Careful, your shirt's caught off. The stand.
Right, that's it. I'm getting rid of this stand once and for all.
And so, once again, the stand is passed on to another victim, unaware of its nightmarish power.
Here you go, doll. I've brought you a nice cup of tea.
Look out for the...
The Stand from Stephen King, the master of terror who brought you the stool, the shelf, the settee, the sideboard, the bracket, the lectern, the footrest, the balustrade, and the Lazy Susan. Next on Martin Malloy.
So you want to watch this stand thing?
Nah, I gotta take a piss.
Yeah, me too.
I'll join you.
Martin Malloy, it's Must Pee TV.
Radio Gladiators is coming up.
In camp lonely all night here in Martin Malloy. Dave O'Neill is going to be dropping by. We've had him on a couple of times before. He's a comedian on the go, on the make, on the way up. And he's got a new live show, I think, which is, I don't know where it's on. I think it's on in Melbourne.
Let him tell us.
Yeah, he'll give us the full story in the next hour. Also, we'll have Sticky Beaks. Radio Gladiators is coming up. Have your pets' problems ready. I think we're playing Radio Vets again today.
Ready?
That's always a roaring failure. We'll get that going. And what about now? I know what we'll do. We haven't done this for a while. Let's have a quick Martin Malloy Consumer Watch.
What you got for us?
Well, I think we may have built it up a tad too much. It's just a couple of pissy observations,
as
really.
As per usual.
Listen to this. I was watching the news last night, and there's a furor over a maternity ad. Have you heard about this?
Which one?
It's an ad featuring a heavily pregnant model from Brizzy who's standing there pretty much starkers, except for a pair of bloomers. She's got her arms folded over the breast, so pretty much all you see is a fairly prominent tum-tum.
Right.
And the caption is, you know, nothing to wear, get down to our maternity joint.
Okay.
You know, pretty simple. Anyway, the ad has sparked a number of complaints to the relevant broadcasting tribunal, one letter claiming the ad to be totally repulsive. Now, Tone, they showed the ad, and I don't see what all the kerfuffle is about. It's no more offensive than looking at a photo of Senator Mel Colston in Speedos. Less offensive, in fact, if Mel refused to fold the arms and cover the buzzies. It'd be no different than a shot of a member of the Sex Pistols getting around in nothing but footy shorts. Less offensive than Ernie Sigley wearing nothing but a pair of wrestling trunks. Less offensive than Marlon Brando in knickerbockers. What's their problem?
Hang on a second. Is Mel Colston doing an ad for maternity wear?
No, but he could.
Oh, it's a what if.
It's a what if.
Okay.
That's what it looked like to me. You know, and that would be allowed. No one would write in letters, would they?
Well, I don't know.
Maybe
I
mean, they would. Maybe I've corrected myself.
So, and it's a preggers woman and it's repulsive. Well, that's a little bit wrong.
I think it is. But, you know, they're going the hammer. Okay. I couldn't see it myself. And look, staying with marketing just for a minute, there's a bit of a furor surrounding a Hungry Jack's promotion, Tone.
Oh, yeah.
And it concerns the safety standard of the sunglasses Hungry Jack's are given away with the purchase of a burger meal deal. Some are suggesting they might not be up to industry standards. Now, Tone, if that were to be true, it shouldn't come as a total surprise to anyone whose primary motivation for purchase was going the honk on a burger. You don't exactly go up to the pimply-faced kid behind the counter at Hungry Jack's and go, "Ah, are you Mr. Coles or Mr. Garrard, do you? What do you expect? They came with a burger." I wouldn't be using these particular sunnies to say, "Do some welding, people." Let's not have any complaints here, please, people. I mean, the bloke who robbed a bank in a pair of drawn-on sunnies probably had a fair idea he'd damage his retinas if he stood there looking at the sun for too long. As for you, Hungry Jacks, what's your story? Whose bright idea was it to throw a pair of sunnies in with a hamburger? What's the problem? Too much glare coming off the meat patties? What's next? Free monocles with every bucket of onion rings?
This is Martin Malloy, brought to you by Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle with an extra 20% free.
Afternoon, everybody. It's still Martin Malloy, and it's time for this.
Radio Gladiators, your chance to represent your state and win fame, glory, and fabulous prizes. Here's today's challenge.
It's time for another round of Animal Hospital.
Good.
at Radio Gladiators. We just want you to call us up with unusual bits of animal behaviour.
How come you get to wear a white coat and I don't?
What are you, chief surgeon? Are you chief vet? I popped down to the Advanced Hair Studios and I got their white coat, the one they use in the commercials.
Oh, yes.
And you get it for the second hour of the program.
All right.
But, you know, we want you to call us up with examples of unusual.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word, unusual animal behaviour. We're going to attempt to provide a diagnosis. We're really hopeless at this, but something usually happens. There's a bit of talk, a bit of loose talk ensues.
Yeah.
And we have no professional qualifications. However, there's been a lot of animal talk in the papers this week. Here's a good one from, at least from a Melbourne newspaper. Thousands of fat pets are joining slimming clubs with weigh-ins, diet food and fitness programs. Obese cats and dogs, some weighing five times more than their ideal weight, are lining up for Weight Watchers-style diets to shed their flab. People are taking their pets down to the slimming clinics.
As long as they don't appear in maternity ads. Wearing nothing but little pants.
Oh, that'd be repulsive.
That'd be repulsive.
Oh, I wouldn't want to see that. And, you know, our cat is stacking on a bit of weight, but instead of going off to the Weight Watchers, we've just got him one of those, you know, the Trevor Hendy stomach roller. Just lies there back and forwards on the stomach roller all day, watching a bit of Midday.
Can eat as many dead birds as it likes. As long as it gets on the Trevor Hendy stomach roller, at the end of the day, he works it off.
That's right. And do Jenny Craig accept cats? Do we know that? Do they accept dogs? Because we had a bit of controversy yesterday. One of our contestants suggested that they don't take blokes. Turned out it wasn't the case, but we don't know if they take animals.
Mm.
I'll be keen to find out. And that's not the only bit of In another story from Melbourne we've been hearing a lot about this week is,
it's a Burmese cat called Rusty. It's gone missing.
Yeah.
The owners of the cat have offered their Porsche as a reward for the return of the missing cat.
Yeah.
So far, we've had people scouring the streets. A bloke came in with two sniffer dogs. Clairvoyants have turned up and they're offering... there'll be a police caravan out the front next week. You'll be seeing it on Crime Stoppers, trust me.
Imagine if the cat turned out to have been locked in the boot of the Porsche. Imagine if they found that out. But what about sniffer dogs to find a cat? Is that
sniffer
a good
dogs?
Idea?
I don't know, yeah. It should, fun should ensue when it's found it.
And we've round at our place, we've got our cat and we've been painting it grey. We're trying everything. We're teaching it that snooty kind of Burmese walk. We're going to get that Porsche if it's the last thing we do. Yes, there's a lot of animal talk, so we think that's a good excuse for animal hospital. Have you had any unusual animal behaviour, Mickey?
Look, here's one. I don't think I've mentioned it before, and it's my dog, Barty Boy.
Right.
And here's something curious. You pull out a harmonica, and it must be something to do with the tone of a harmonica and a dog's sense of hearing. But you pull out the harmonica and you play it, and Barty Boy gets up on his two hind legs, starts howling like there's no tomorrow, and does what I can only describe as the doggy version of the Macarena.
Right.
He just goes off.
Have you thought of bringing it in? That sounds like a break for this
program. I can do it. I can organise that. When would you like it?
I think
it's going to be the halftime entertainment at the AFL Grand Final. So you'll all get to see it then, people.
Yeah, and harmonica work. What if there's, say, a bit of Bob Dylan on the telly? Does it start doing it?
Actually thinking of getting him one of Bob Dylan's, you know, little stands so he can play it himself as he dances.
And tiny little doggy cymbals on the knees.
What about that?
I mentioned fat cats. My mum's got a real, real fat cat.
Mm-hmm.
And it sunbathes, this is true, by digging a hole in the lawn and just lying back like Marlon Brando on a Lilo with its ass just down in the ground so that it's level. It's totally flat. It's
sure.
A brilliant bit of work.
Just, you know, on the whistle. Bring me a drink.
That's right.
Bring me a dead bird. Somebody!
Room service. What about our cat? It's hypnotised by Teddy off Murder One's head. You know, cats sometimes spot something on the telly. You know, normally if you try and get them to watch the telly, if you sit them down with the G-code and the TV week and snacks, nothing. Nothing. They don't see you going, look, stuff happening, stuff
it's happening.
It's
must-see TV.
Nothing. And then every now and then they will see something and just go, what's going on? And it's always Teddy's noggin. Teddy's noggin on Murder One, transfect. Hypnotised.
Mm.
He's surrounded by cats wherever he goes, they play. All right, we're looking for, I think the listeners can come up with better unusual animal, dog, cat, bird, zebra, whatever you got. If you've got a push me, pull you that's just doing something weird, give us a call, tell us about it here at Radio Gladiators. Do we have a prize? $500. That was worth waiting for. Thank you, the Martin Malloy Orchestra. $500 and a big box of soothers, all thanks to the makers of that ingenious little lozenge, the Soother. Call us now with your unusual pet behaviour. We'll try and provide some kind of diagnosis. 1-800-657-657.
Hi, I'm the guy who says Martin Malloy. Call me on the new SAFM.
George Michael with Fast Love here at Martin Malloy, where it's time for Radio Gladiators. And by the way, if you can't get through to Radio Gladiators, I know people have been trying for a year and a half.
Yep.
Don't be discouraged, because you will eventually.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of us answering phones from all over the whole country, and we're taking as many as we can. Also, don't be discouraged if we reject your suggestion, because, you know, we're trying to put together the tapestry.
We get a lot of very similar ones, don't
we? Yeah, and, you know, people get a bit narky after we reject the fourth dog with diarrhea. You know, we're swimming in dogs with diarrhea. Yeah. We're sorry, madam. There's nothing we can do.
We're actually looking for a regular dog.
That's right. Just for that'd be unusual behaviour from where I'm sitting. And that's what we're doing today. We're looking for unusual pet behaviour. It's officially Martin Malloy Animal Hospital. Who have we got? Mickey.
It's John. How are you, John?
Hi, good.
That's the way. Now, tell us about your unusual bit of animal behaviour.
Once I went to an emu farm and if you stare into their eyes, they run around in circles.
How did you find this? How close did you get to an emu for a bit of a stare?
For about a metre.
Oh, about a metre.
And it was one of those competitions where, you know, it's the first to look away, is it?
No, we're just having fun and we're staring into their eyes and they just ran around in circles.
Did they?
You have special powers, young man.
You're not one of these psychic kiddies, are you, John?
No.
You're not a spooky kid?
No.
Okay, just check.
I'd like to see that. That's quite a talent. That'll put those hypnotists out of work, won't it? Now, they make humans run around like emus, but this guy can make an emu run around like an emu.
Have you told your parents what you've been doing? Have you told them about the emu staring, John?
No, not yet.
Okay,
They gave him a talking to, but he just stared into their eyes and they ended up running around the lounge room in circles.
All right, John, will you hang in there? Because you could be our winner today. We're talking now to Chris. Chris, you've got some unusual behaviour for us.
Yeah, my dog, every morning and afternoon when we close the huge roller doors on the industrial shed, he puts on a bit of a dance. He spins on the spot as if he's sitting on a record turntable that's been put into overdrive and barks the whole time.
Right.
At the roller door.
In the afternoon, when it's coming down, he jumps up and tries to attack it, and most times does. He's left some huge marks on the door.
So he's going the bite on the roller door.
Oh, yeah.
We've all seen dogs go the bite on hose water. Actually go on the bite. You know what? If that was happening at my place, I'd be out there with the remote all day long. Just watching the hijinks.
He'd be down the road for batteries once a week too, Martin. And as it's going up, is he ever hanging on to it?
No, but he tends to forget that his paw might get caught, and a number of times he pulled the door down on his paw.
Oh, you don't want to do that. He just reaches through and grabs his hat at the last minute.
Give me that.
All right. Okay, thanks, Chris. Now we've got Miles. Are you there, Miles?
Yep.
What have you got for us?
Well, we got a cat, and we live out in the farm, and it's like, it's a real hunting cat. And what it does, it goes off at about 5 at night,
yep.
And it goes catch rabbits, like little kittens.
Catches rabbits?
Yeah, and what it does,
yep.
It comes back and we might be outside and it'll drop it at our feet and it'll play fetch with the cat. Like, you throw the rabbit away, the cat runs after it, grabs the rabbit and brings it back and drops it at your feet.
Gee.
And that can go on for what, hours?
Oh, yeah, it can go on for a fair while.
Do you have a roller door, Miles?
No, we don't.
I see. And how big is this cat that it's tackling rabbits and bringing them back?
I don't know. It's a normal-sized cat, I suppose.
Is it dragging him by the ears? How does it get him back? A whole rabbit?
I don't know. It just grabs it by the back of it. I don't know, along the neck.
I know a rabbit it couldn't get back, and that was... I saw this the other day in a park. I'm walking up. I thought it was a dog. I'm in a park, and I see a rabbit on a leash, and it's bigger than any dog I've seen in that park. It was huge. It was natural. Oh, do you know, apparently someone told me they come from New Zealand or something, and they're these huge hybrid rabbits, but it was the size of a small sheep.
They come over here and they go straight on the dole, Mickey.
That's what I've heard.
Every time. All right, well, rabbit catching cat, thanks for that, Miles. Next we've got Rose. Rose, what's happening at your place?
Hi, well, we have this bizarre tropical fish, and it used to swim upside down at the top of the tank, you know, like impersonating a dead fish.
So you've got a fish that plays dead.
Well, yeah.
Are you sure it wasn't just dead?
No, because we came home one day, like months later after this started, and the fish was right way up at the bottom of the tank, and we laughingly said, hey, that fish is dead. And it was.
Oh, it was dead. It was dead, but it was pretending to be alive.
Yes.
Okay. And you've never heard of anything like this before?
No, it certainly doesn't happen very often here.
Oh, so it's just kicking them out in the top of the tank doing the backstroke.
A fish faking its own death. Was the tax problems?
This went on for months.
I see. All right, well, that's pretty good. Thanks, Rose. Have we got Cheryl? Are you there, Cheryl?
Yes.
What have you got at your place?
Oh, I've had a really overweight red heeler, and when we go up and check the mail, she gets on top of the driveway, yeah, rolls on her back, and then you have to push her down.
Oh, you can roll her down the drive. How many gyrations will she do?
Oh, quite a few when you get a good push up on her.
Oh, fantastic. Have you taken her to one of them water slides?
No, it's a bit scary to do that.
Right, so it's an overweight red heeler. You haven't been tempted to take it along to Weight Watchers like many people are doing, at least in Melbourne?
Well, I've taken her to the vet and he's suggested diet food.
Diet food, oh, that's a poor state of affairs. Is it, could you describe it as a coffee table? I know friends of mine, when you see a real fat dog and it's got the flat back happening, they refer to it as a coffee table.
She's more like a corgi with a really, really oversized corgi with really short legs.
Well, that sounds like a coffee. You know they're getting too fat when you actually find the coffee mug rings on the top of the... All right. Okay, we've got a dog that rolls down a hill. That's pretty good. Mm. I think we've got time for one more. Who's it going to be?
It's Scott. How are you, Scotty?
Good, mate. How you going?
Good. What you sitting on?
Oh, I've got a couple for you. The first one's me dog eats lawn bowls, bowling balls, the wooden ones.
And you feel you need to give us a second one.
Yeah, well, we used to have this black cat, and this was really weird. Yeah. He used to hide behind our couch, and when my wife would walk through to the kitchen and start washing the dishes, he'd fly out from behind, right up her leg, and then swing from her underwear by his claws.
It's a good time cat. That's a cat who likes to get out and have a good play.
Yeah, all right. Well, we've got an abseiling cat hanging from the derps, and we've got
a cat that backs its owner. Pretty bizarre.
Is that our winner?
I think it might be.
It's our winner. But in the middle of that, we might have passed over too quickly. The dog that eats lawn bowls? Is that what's going on?
Well, I don't know. My grandpa gave us this lawn bowling ball, and we didn't play lawn bowls, so we fed it to the dog. And he just ate it.
Wow, what is the rule in lawn bowls when a dog eats the small one? Is
it? Well, it depends how close it is to the jack.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll have to consult the manual. All right, well, you're our winner anyway, Scott, so you've got the $500 and
thanks,
the soothers. Thanks for playing. Thanks to everybody who took part. It was a sterling selection. And we'll be back in the next hour with comedian Dave O'Neill.
This is Martin Molloy.
And the confessions they signed will take them right to the gallows.
Brought to you by Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle with an extra 20% free.
And in this hour of what we like to call Martin Molloy, Sticky Beaks, Contraceptive Corner, our new colour supplement, and next up, comedian Dave O'Neill, all thanks to Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle. You've seen it. It's got that 20% extra on the top for nothing.
Well, that'd be the theme from Friends, I'm guessing. Here at Martin Molloy, it was the Rembrandts, of course. It's the second hour. And, Mickey, let's rope in somebody else, as we like to do about this time. Our guest today, well, he's a local comedian and writer making good on the live circuit. If you're in Melbourne, you can see him at the moment, I think, down the last laugh, performing with a couple of other blokes. It's the Osso Bucco Big Barbecue Bash. If it's a roaring success, it'll doubtless be coming to your town soon. He's been preparing for this segment Sydney Swan style. He was up all night with a packet of frozen peas down the front of his derps. He's primed. He's ready. He's Dave O'Neill.
Thanks, Dave.
Guys.
Hey, Dave.
Not bad. Guys, realise there's danger in emotional ties.
How true it is.
Hang on.
Wham, 1982, they spoke the truth.
What was that Club Tropicana business? That was a very moving song, I remember.
I think Andrew Ridgely wrote that one, actually.
Yeah. Was that your favourite?
Yes. Yeah. What have happened to him?
I don't know. He was blown off the screen by that other twerp.
He did a lot of skiing, I think, and a bit of motor car driving. And, yes, Club Tropicana drinks are free. That was how the lyric went. I think it was a very important and relevant song.
I love quoting Wham, though. I quote it all the time. When did the quickie marches up the road? I said, Coke. She said, $1.20. I said, last Christmas, you gave me your love. But the very next day, you gave it away. She said, well, you didn't wake me up before your go-go. You left me hanging like a yo-yo.
And do people ever mistake you for Andrew Ridgely? Because we haven't seen him for so long. He could look like you now, Dave. No offence, of course.
I'm sure they would in those little hot pants.
Nice.
Yeah, they look good.
Now, Dave, we were talking about animal behaviour in Radio Gladiators. Do you have pets? Have you got unusual animal behaviour?
I've got one cat. I've got Schnoodle the cat. And it actually, the big thing about Schnoodle is it drinks out of the toilet.
Right.
So I say, hey, I don't piss in your bowl. Don't drink out of my toilet. But it's like, you know, you come home, there's like paw prints in the toilet. It's like a country rock song. There's paw prints in the toilet. There's fur in the bowl. But
if it went missing, though, would you offer a Porsche? That's what I want to know.
My BMX, maybe. But if you look closely at that Porsche, you can actually see Rusty under the wheel.
Okay.
Under the wheel.
I see. Now, Dave, what have you been up to? I know it's an exciting showbiz lifestyle for someone like yourself. Can you drop a few names?
Well, I can say, hey, hey, I've actually appeared on Hey, Hey.
Hey.
Yes, I did a stand-up
in the duck
spot.
Suit?
No. Okay. I got out of the duck suit one night.
Good stuff.
And I appeared on Hey, Hey, and it's funny, the recognition you got, I've been recognised twice.
Right.
I went into a chicken shop yesterday, and the woman said, oh, you on Hey, Hey, you were great. Beryl, this guy was on Hey, Hey, he won Red Faces. I said, excuse me, a bit of a technical point here. I wasn't on Red Faces. I was a professional comedian doing a professional spot, all right? She said, well, what would you like, Mr. Professional. So I've lost a chicken shop fan. And the other time I was recognised from Hey Hey, straight after Hey Hey, I went to a party in the inner city. Yeah. And I was wearing the jacket I was wearing on the night on Hey Hey and a T-shirt saying, yes, it was me on Hey Hey. And only recognised by one person, though, a skinhead, right? And as he was bending over to steal one of my stubbies from the bathroom, because I knew it was one of my stubbies, because I always buy obscure name brand beers when I go to parties. So I can just scan the room and see who's drinking the Abbott's Lager tonight, because they're my beers, right? And as he bent down to steal my stubby, he goes, hey, I saw you on telly tonight. And then I went, oh, my God. And he goes, don't worry, I like you. And then he goes, but tell you what, if you see that duck, tell him he's going to go if I ever see him. And I didn't have the heart to say it's not a it's not a real thing. It's actually a person inside the costume.
There's obviously been an incident in the past.
Yeah.
It's been traumatising him. We know a bloke who works on Hey Hey. I won't name him, but it's not Russell Gilbert. I don't want to get Russ into trouble. But in January of this year, this bloke said to me, guess who we've got as a guest on Hey Hey this year? And I said, who? And he's gone, the Dalai Lama is going to be on. And I've been looking forward to it all year. Mr. Lama.
Nurse.
But apparently there was some scheduling problems. The Dalai missed his flight. You think he'd be able to tee that up, wouldn't you? But
I heard he pulled out because he didn't want to be involved in their nerd show.
I always see the Dalai with all the pens in the top pocket of a sarong. But he didn't make it, and there was some and it didn't happen, and I was so I wanted to see the Dalai doing celebrity head. Wouldn't you like to see that? Zhu Xiaoping on the top of the bus. Who is it? Tell me. Doing a bit of Red Faces panel work and, you know, having that...
On the bike instead of the duck. Going like the clappers.
Pluck a Dalai.
Digging in, go, Mr. Lama, where's your llama? Hey!
Whoa. But it was not to be, sadly. And
shocking. Yeah, he was bumped because of me, actually.
Well, we want...
Filling in. He was in the dressing room getting very upset as I was on stage.
He stormed out because somebody was wearing the same thing as him.
And is that the extent of your TV appearances?
No. Guys, I have actually done midday.
Really?
For all the unemployed and long-term drug addicts, they would recognise me.
Right.
I did midday, which I did when Darren Hinch was doing it, though. I did in the golden years.
Oh, okay.
And it was very funny. They took me aside before I went on. They said, no, listen, we don't want you to swear or say anything rude because we don't want to offend anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you've got Darren Hinch on for an hour and you're worrying about offending people. But it wasn't bad, but the funniest thing was when I was there, they have those pictures on the wall in the green room of all the celebrities.
Yep.
And they had a lot of Ray Martin, because this is when they're trying to phase Darren in, get Ray out.
They're about the same size as that picture of John Howard was in Singapore or Malaysia or
was
somewhere
in
last week.
Indonesia. The giant-sized Howard.
Well, and they had these photos, and there was one of Paul Hogan and Ray Martin under the couch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there was one of Phyllis Diller and Ray Martin, you know, two of my comedy greats.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, I'll knock these off, right? Because I'd finished my bit, right? No one was around, so I stuck him in my jacket, my showbiz jacket, and I was walking out. I was at the foyer, and then one of the producers ran over, David, I just want to shake your hand on a great job. And I said, I don't think I can, and got in the taxi and left.
And can I just ask quickly, Dave, how did you go?
On Ray Martin, I went well. Yeah. On midday, I went, the first time I went well.
Hang on a second. So, you went back?
Yes.
I don't know many comedians have gone back for seconds.
I went back the second time, and about 10 minutes before I was due on, the guy came and said, look, you're not going on, but don't worry. They're a terrible audience. They're all Japanese tourists. They won't understand you. Okay, so be grateful. Then about a minute later, he came back and said, oh, you're on.
Oh, dear. You can always tell the comics who have done midday before because they just emphasise things a bit too much. Two blokes go into a bar. Shane Bourne's a master. Two blokes, right, okay, you're with me? Two blokes, okay, two blokes.
I'll say it again, two blokes.
The only thing about going on midday, I got one phone call, one booking opportunity. A guy rang up and I go, and said, oh, we're having a 50-50 dance down on the peninsula and I really need a... I said, you need a comedian? He goes, no, I need a partner.
All right, well...
No skinheads coming up. It's all your midday.
We'll have more tales of the heights of giddy showbiz success with Dave O'Neill next on Mark Molloy. Yes, it's Desiree. You've got to be here at Martin Molloy. Dave O'Neill, comedian Dave O'Neill, is with us, and he's been regaling us with tales of his showbiz ascension to the top. What about touring, Dave?
I've actually done a lot. I've actually on quite a big tour at the moment because school holidays are coming up. Some are already with us in some states. I've put together this group that sort of explains my ethnicity. It's called the Woggles. So it's really great fun.
Are you just minting the gold records as a result?
Oh, yeah. It's been fantastic. But I actually have just come back from a tour of rural New South Wales with Elliot Goblet and Bruno Lucia.
Oh, yes.
And I was a bit worried about a promoter. I think he was a little naive. The first day, I was eating a packet of chips I'd bought from the shop. And he said, why are you eating chips, mate? I've got heaps of free ones in the room. Plus drinks as well. They're all free. Mm. It was actually the mini bar he was talking about.
Oh, I see. And what is it
very
like?
Free.
What is it like being on tour with Elliot Goblet? Does he let the hair down? Does he go nuts?
Party animal. He used to say good night and walk to his room, and that was it. We went in search of the Wagga Wagga nightlife. We found a Coke machine, but it was turned off.
Mm. I'd be careful. This show goes to Wagga Wagga.
Oh, Wagga Wagga's a great spot. Honestly, it was fantastic. No, they were a good crowd.
Chock-a-block with sporting heroes up that way too. How many footballers they got in this grand final? They got about five, and I think our Australian cricket captain comes from Wagga Wagga.
Everyone in sport comes from Wagga Wagga. I don't know if you know about this, Dave. Everyone in sport.
Really? Well, any opportunity to leave the place, probably.
You name someone from sport.
Kerry-Ann Kenley.
Wagga Wagga.
Boris Becker.
Wagga Wagga.
Absolutely.
Plugger.
Wagga Wagga.
Yeah. That's great that Eddie does, by the way, the Hungry Jacks ad. I like the bit where they get to sing at the end. Yeah. Hungry Jacks does it for me. I reckon a baseball bat would do it for me.
But the burger should be called the Plugger. I reckon you'd be in here, you'd be buying those couple of pluggers. The plugger meal deal. That's what I want to say. I want to walk in Angry Jackson and go, give me a plugger burger and give me my sonnies.
It's misleading because everyone knows you as Big Macs anyway. Yeah.
And when you get the table mat, has it got a diagram of pluggers' groin troubles on it?
Stress points,
all that kind of deal.
Little pictures for the kiddies. Now, Dave, I must ask, because every time you come on the show, you give us a little story about your life on the road with ventriloquist David Strassman.
Yes. I have got another story, actually. More of an observation, but have I ever told you guys about the girl in the box?
Have we heard this one?
No, I'm all ears. No, I have not. What actually, on the first tour I did with him, he didn't have all the electronic stuff, so there was this bit where he'd put teddy bear on a box and the teddy would start moving right at the finale of the show. Yeah. And I couldn't work out how it was done, and then I met the girl in the box. And after about 2 weeks, I saw this girl hanging around. I thought, who is she? And she said, I'm the girl in the box. So for the whole 2 hours of the show, she would lie in this box, right, that resembled a coffin, and then in the last, like, 3 minutes in the finale, she would stick a hand up teddy bear and work it.
Gee, and that's a prestige gig, isn't it?
And that was it. And to make things even more Twin Peaks, she was a Mormon, this girl. And she showed me the inside of the box, and there's some great graffiti, the best one being, God, I need to pee.
And can you go on? I mean, is there, you know, where do you go after something like that? Would she be getting those dishwashing hand ads? I mean, is it the beginning of a lot of hand work, I imagine?
She could get inside the fat cat costume, maybe working the Winnie Pooh at the fate, I don't know.
And any more dirt on Dave? Because I know you've pretty much destroyed your chances of ever working with him again over the weeks on this program.
Definitely. Well, there was a fight one time at one of the gigs. It was the Christmas season, and they had this great deal where you pay $15 for all the drinks you can drink, and that included bottled beer and spirit.
Right.
So I was banging my $15 on the table every night. And anyway, there was these guys in from a paper mill, and I was up there. I was doing fine with them, a bit of witty rapport. So who's got a paper cut? Well, hey, and what's going on? And so Strassman came
came on and these guys started making a bit of noise, yelling out and stuff because they were Australians, they were drunk, they were in a theatre restaurant. They thought that's what they do.
Absolutely.
and so they started yelling out and Stresman goes, "Right, you guys are going to have to leave. Simon, take these guys away." And this wimpy, there was no security, this wimpy barman came down and went, "Okay, guys, yeah, you're going to have to go." And the guys just thought, "Hey, yeah," they thought it was part of the show. They thought they were going to go outside and reappear in a box or something. And so they went outside and the guy locked the glass doors stupidly. And so about 3 minutes later, they're banging on the doors. Let us in, the doors were smashed. They came running in. And Strassman, with all his skills, said, they all started yelling out, "Hey, you Yankee bastard," and all this. And Strassman, with his comeback, said, "Yeah, well, why don't you come up here and say that, you mother effer?" And so they did.
I see.
There was nothing stopping them. The stage is only 5 foot high. I mean,
Dave's over at the box going, "Move over! I'm coming in!"
But they didn't understand the fourth wall of theatre, you know what I mean?
The puppet said it. It wasn't me. It was him.
He's the only ventriloquist doing the rounds. He should be performing behind chicken wire.
Yeah, so the guy ran up. The guy came on stage, right, with nunchuckers, actually. And Straz was sitting there. And the puppet had pissed off by then. And the sound guy ran on. And pushed this guy into the audience, and then this huge riot erupted in the venue, and Strassman just walked off stage. And I was at the back cuddling teddy bear, I tell you.
Another top night was had by all. Absolutely. And if you want a top night at the theatre enjoying comedy and violence, why not pop along to The Last Laugh in Melbourne, where you and a couple of mates, Al Parks and Vic Plume, the Plumester, turning on a big barbecue bash. Just quickly, is there a barbecue on stage?
There is. It's a companion, not a Weber.
Okay.
Anyone in the barbecue?
Oh, there's a rubber chop, actually, as we speak. It's upstairs at La Joke. So
all right.
Starts tonight, 10:30.
Okay. The big opening tonight.
All right, and if it's a hit, it'll be going everywhere. Am I right?
Oh, look, Cairns, Hobart, everywhere.
Except for Wagga Wagga. All right, well, thanks for coming in today, Dave.
Thank you very much, guys.
And we'll see you next. We won't see you next because I'm afraid, Mick, we're going to have to step into the beak zone. Thanks, Dave. That's next. I'm Martin Malloy. That's Dishwalla. They're just counting them blue cars here at Martin Malloy, where
it's time to invade the privacy of fellow Australians as we play Sticky Beaks. Here's how it works. We need two complete strangers to call us here at Martin Malloy. During the break, Mick and Tony will pry into their personal lives and extract the information they need to pit our two beaks against each other. If you're our winning sticky beak, you'll bag the entire Crowded House CD back catalogue. And you'll go into the draw for 1 week in your very own dream house, a castle in Germany, where you'll be presented with the 1 millionth copy of Crowded House's recurring dream and be packed off to the concert of your choice. All thanks to Arc Music TV, only on Optus Vision. You know, a lot of people think of that Paul Clitheroe from Nine's Money program as a bit of a square. Well, you wouldn't think that if, like me, you'd recently stuck your beak in his office and found him hanging from the ceiling by his nipples like Richard Harris in A Man Called Horse. Helps to ease the pre-show tension, Petey said, as he launched into the lead break from Ace of Spades on his Stratocaster. I wanted to ask him why he was wearing nothing but a nappy, but, well, it just didn't seem like the time.
Every word of it true. Yep. Thanks very much, Pete Smith. No one says Stratocaster. You feel like you've won one just hearing him say it. Stratocaster. Here at Martin Malloy, it's Sticky Beaks, and we've got a back catalogue of Crowded House CDs.
To unload.
That's right. It's got your name on it, and if you win today on Sticky Beaks, it's yours. Plus, you're going into the draw for a week in a dream house, nay, a dream castle in Germany. Have any of our competitors jumped on this bandwagon? I reckon there'll be radio shows all over the shop going, we got to get ourselves a castle.
Trying
in
to snaffle their own castle.
Price package.
I've had a look through the real estate section of the paper, Tony, and they don't come up too often.
Don't they?
No. You don't get too many. I did see this particular one, though, on the cover of Castle Beautiful.
Really?
Yes. No, it's a fine publication.
And did it look good? Did it look tops?
Oh, Tone. What can I say? Shag pile.
Yeah.
Right up the walls.
Did it say lots of character?
Lots of character,
because when they say character in those real estate ads, you know you've got a lot of work in front of you.
It said first castle owner's dream.
Oh, yes. An ideal fixer-upper opportunity. All right. We're going to send you there. We're going to send somebody there eventually. We're drawing the prize next Friday. Whatever happens, if you win today, you get all them Crowded House CDs. Call us now, 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy. Brought to you by Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle with an extra 20% free.
this.
And once again here at Martin Molloy, it's Sticky Beaks. It's the part of the program where we get to know our listeners just a little bit better. Who are we going to be poking about in the private affairs of today, Mickey?
There's a Beekster for you. It's Jared. How are you, Jared?
Yeah, not too bad.
That's all right. And, well, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
Full-time uni student, do physiotherapy.
Gee, that's a vanishing bunch. Full-time uni students. Do you like Amanda Vanstone? Do you like her?
She's not on top of my favourite list.
All right.
And have you noticed a lot more thick, rich people at uni since her policies were introduced?
Nah, not too many.
Okay. All right. Well, who's taking you on today? Let's see. Opposing you in the second beak chair, we've got Andrea. Andrea?
G'day.
Are you with us?
Yep.
Good. And tell us about yourself, just seeing if it's going to give anything away. No, what do you do for a crust?
Well, I'm a full-time mum.
Oh, really? How many kids are we talking about?
We've got two kids.
Oh, I see. And are they giving you trouble? How have you been today?
Oh, no, they've been great. Okay. They've been good. One's away and one's behaving herself.
Oh, one's away.
One's away. What's he doing?
Oh, she's up at a place called Kooytong. Kooytong.
I see.
Having a whale of a time.
Yeah, no doubt.
Good stuff.
All right, well, I think we've heard enough. Let's get down to the cauldron, shall we, Mickey?
Right.
And I'll kick things off today. Here's a question for Jared. Andrea drives A, Barina, B, a Renault, C, a nitro-burning funny car.
Has to go A.
Oh, I'm afraid she's on for a Renault. Is that right, Andrea?
That's correct.
I see. And during that whole French testing business, were people chucking eggs at your car?
No, it survived really well.
Oh, good. Well done. All right. Well, what about a question for
Andrea? Can do. Andrea, when he's feeling especially peckish, Jared will eat A, Mars bar, B, a Chico roll, C, anything the chef from Healthy, Wealthy and Wise hasn't touched with his sausage-like fingers.
A.
A Mars bar. That's exactly right, ain't that so, Jared?
That's for sure.
Ooh, you love your Mars bars, don't you?
How many would you be able to knock back on the current student allowance?
4 or 5 a week.
Right, 4 or 5 a week. Mm. And what about Amanda Vanstone's cinema ticket analogy? Are you buying that one?
Haven't heard about it,
though. Oh, well, apparently all her cuts are just coming to the equivalent of one cinema ticket a week for you students.
It destroys my social life then.
Okay. All right. As long as you got them Mars bars, here's a question about Andrea. Something you'll always find in Andrea's handbag is A, comb, B, a mirror, C, a pen with a likeness of Greg Matthews on it. When you turn it upside down, his hair falls off.
Oh, I'll go for A again.
A comb, yes. She's on the comb in the Renault, correct.
That's how she gets about town, young Andrea. All right, Andrea, answer me this. Jared would describe his sex life as A, over the top, B, average, C, like the Sydney Swans the night before a grand final.
A.
No, he's fessed up and said it's just pretty darn average.
Yes, and I'm sure that's as a result of Amanda Vanstone as well. I'm sure.
Too busy on the Mars bar. That's his problem.
Here's another question for you, Jared. The TV personality Andrea most resembles is A, Kerri-Anne Kennelly, B, Helen Wellings, C, Fatty Vorton.
B.
Oh, no, she's actually gone the Kerri-Anne Kennelly option. Is that right, Andrea?
Yes.
And how closely do you resemble her?
Well, I actually said Kerri-Anne Kennelly.
Oh, okay, so you resemble the parody. I see.
Well,
all right. And do you belt out a number during the daytime, Andrea?
I do, but no one listens, which is really lucky.
Never done the Macarena with our federal treasurer?
Nah.
Oh, well, something to look forward to, Andrea. Here we go for your last question. When he was at school, Jared's nickname was A, Flounder, B, Snapper, C, Jared Bowditch, Lord of the Playground.
B.
Snapper? No, it was Flounder.
Oh, dear.
Where'd you get that from, Jared?
To be honest with you, I have no idea. None of my friends can tell me.
Okay,
it's something that's stuck.
I believe we have a tiebreaker situation. Yes, it's locked at 1 point each. So what we're going to do is throw a question at you. And the first person to answer A, B or C when I've read out the three options will win. And as always, it's a question about either Mick or myself today. It's Mick. Here we go. You ready, Beaks?
Yep.
Okay, here we go. Mick's dog, which was referred to earlier, is called A, Bart, B, Jack, C, Heavenly Harani Tiger Lily. Which is it?
B.
B is correct.
No, it's A. Confusion. Oh, I'm sorry.
It was A.
Oh, yes.
We got
okay,
A, and it was
right.
Jared, I believe.
Okay, well, there's been some confusion, but Jared is, in fact, the winner.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Tension and controversy here on the beach.
Lucky we know exactly what we're doing at all times.
Oh, you're
because it's such a complex competition there. It could degenerate into a farce at any moment. But we were on the case.
That's right. Sorry about that, Andrea. But guess what? You've got a Martin Malloy fashion accessory.
Well done.
That's going to, you know, aid with your Kerry Ann Kennelly impression.
And look good in the Renault too.
Oh, yeah,
in the Renault, on the comb, in your Martin Malloy T-shirt. The world will be your oyster,
and
Andrea.
As for you, Jared, you've got, well, it's the full Crowded House back catalogue.
That's unreal.
And it's coming your way. I'm not sure if the students are into the house these days. But it's all yours. And, of course, you could be off to Germany if you come out of the barrel. So thanks for taking part.
No worries.
All right, and that'll be in a couple of... Oh, it's at the end of next week, so okay. Be listening then, and we'll be back with a couple more beaks tomorrow on Martin Malloy.
Thank you, sir, but please don't shove your big nose in my business. Your big nose in my business. That nosy Joe, the nosiest guy I know. Dig that nose.
Martin Malloy, and I do apologise for that confusion during Sticky Beak's. Mixed Dog is, of course, called Bart. I said yes for B because, of course, it was Jack. You're old.
That's why he never comes when you call.
I see. Well, I am. I'm out the back going, B? B is A? Oh, now he's coming.
No. Jack's his stage name when he's on the harmonica.
No, of course, we all know, Mickey, your old dog Jack went into the witness protection scheme years ago. All right.
Now, Bart,
let's put it behind us and let's have something now for our more sophisticated listeners.
There's pages of nauseating crap in this week's pretentious weekend. What does the average Australian woman think about life in the 90s? We go to lunch with a fashion editor, two publicists, an art director, and a groovy kind of freelance journo from the arts pages and discuss it over lattes and focaccia. The latest moody young Australian actor no one in the real world has ever heard of, and the five unreleasable films he'll be starring in next year. People who don't work in the media. Do they really exist? Ordinary stuff that normal people take for granted. We subject it to the usual postmodern deconstructive analysis. Exciting young Australian filmmakers with something to say. We check out their fashion sense. Retro, why it's passé. Tarantino, just thought we'd mention him again, even though we all hate him now. And the third world, can you get a decent coffee? All this plus dozens of snooty ads for things you'll never be able to afford, you disgusting little poor person, in this week's pretentious weekend. Coming soon to Martin Malloy. All-time bottom five.
Tricking across the universe.
On the Starship Enterprise, on the Captain Kirk.
For mystery, I took the words out of my mouth.
Your all-time bottom five songs could bag you a fabulous prize. If we had one. Instead, let's take a tour through the prize vaults.
Prize Vault 1.
Live free for 12 seconds.
Prize Vault 2.
A kick in the pants.
Prize Vault 3.
Lunch with Senator Mal Colston.
Prize Vault 4.
Another kick in the pants.
Prize Vault 5.
Buried treasure in Laurie Oaks. Your time, bottom five. The competition with this noise and this one, and don't forget this one, coming soon to Martin Malloy.
I've
thing that looks good on him is you, and almost time for us to go here at Martin Molloy. Is it Teddy night, Mick?
It's Teddy night, and it could be the last, or it might be the second last night. If you want to catch his big, baldy noggin, tune in to Channel 7 tonight. Yeah. You know what he needs? One of those wigs they give to the judge. So they should be slipping on Eddie, Teddy's head.
We're talking about Murder One. Is it reaching a conclusion yet?
One would hope, Tone. It's a murder trial that's been going on for some time now.
Yeah, I think it's the closing statements. That'll go for about 4 weeks.
Here's another 4 weeks.
Do you have any further statements?
I have no further questions.
Not cutting into the domestic scenes, apparently.
Someone please come up and slap me on the head. Benny Hill style.
Okay, now what are we going to talk about?
Bring back Teddy!
All right, he's going, because when he goes, at the end of the series, they're bringing in Anthony LaPaglia. Mm. He's going to shave up the noggin. He's taking over the role. I'm not joking. Now, just before we go, here at Martin Molloy, we always like to bring you new developments in condom technology. Last month, we brought you news of the paint-on condom. Remember that?
Yep.
Which you apply with a brush and which takes 7 minutes to set. Very romantic. That doesn't seem to have caught on. Mickey, I think because getting it off basically involved just too much sanding. You know, it would be, darling, that was fantastic.
Might be a sec.
You know, so you'd need goggles and a surgical mask. Enough of that, thanks, Gracie. Now, listen to this. A British designer has now invented a user-friendly condom applicator.
Oh, really?
Called the Topaz.
The Topaz.
The Topaz. Care for a romantic evening? You bring the wine, I'll bring the Topaz. Monaco-based millionaire Keith Jones has been working on the Topaz in his shed for the last 6 years. Mm. Gee, he'd have a one-track mind, wouldn't he? You know, you'd be out at dinner with him. Keith, what are you thinking? Nothing at all. Why are you staring at my wife while she vacuum seals all those salamis for the freezer? Because that's what it must be like. One of them freezer bag applicators. Yeah. They don't say exactly in the article. They just say a condom applicator. Mm. I'm picturing some kind of downstairs version of the KTEL paddy stacker. Ta-da! Ready to go. Keith says the Topaz allows you to maintain that passionate moment and apply the condom without losing eye contact with your partner. Gee, imagine that. Ah, darling, look deep into my eyes. I think it's time for us to get out of here, Gracie.
Yeah, I tried that the other night, Tone, with my girlfriend, and tried looking deep into her eyes, and you know what happened? Ran around the room like an emu.
Is that right?
Yeah, it must be some weird power.
The Topaz, it's being tested at the moment in Monaco. Do you reckon they're using that Daniel Ducre, the former lover of Princess Stephanie?
He's the guinea pig in this little operation.
Yeah, he'll be running around with his Topaz. Just going nuts all over Monaco. It really is time for us to go.
It's time for you to go.
And I'd like to thank our guests, of course, Dave O'Neill, all our gladiators, and all our sticky beaks. Tomorrow we'll be joined by Bruce McAvaney.
Yes!
He'll be here at Martin Molloy. And until then, remember, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.
Martin Molloy is a misguided production in association with half-baked ideas and ill-conceived concepts, Proprietary Limited. Brought to you by Coca-Cola's new 500ml bottle with an extra 20% free. Pete Smith speaking.